You're listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Depending on how you count, 1% or less of America's total population currently serves in a branch of the country's armed forces. Even when you include veterans in that group and those who no longer serve, the figure is still close to just about 7%. That group, the nation's current and former service members, is a small fraction, but its needs are great and unique. Today on Dialogue, we explore the landscape of veterans coming home. And we have veterans to talk to about that. Lyle Allen is an Army veteran. He served in Iraq in 2004 and 2005. He is a Purple Heart recipient. Today he works with the Vet Center. That is a subdivision of the Department of Veterans Affairs under the Veterans Health Administration. Lyle, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us.
And Karine Victor is a Navy veteran. She served from 2002 to 2007 in the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C., at the Pentagon just across the river in Virginia, and on the USS Philippine Sea based out of Jacksonville, Florida. Today, she's an IT specialist and has many other pursuits. Karine, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me here today.
Later on this hour, we hope to be joined by Linda Hinkle. She's a former Army combat medic and the founder of the University of Tennessee's Lady Vets Group. We're waiting on her to call in, and she'll be joining us later on. Let's, I guess, begin at the beginning and tell us your story. Again, speaking from a small group of people who have this unique experience to a much larger group of civilians that haven't. Lyle, we can begin with you. Tell us about your deployment. What did you go through?
Well, I was deployed between 2004 and 2005. I was a combat engineer, so our main mission out there was route clearance, making sure all the highways were cleared, provided security during the elections there. So during that time, we were just doing our everyday combat missions out there. And this was during the time of the Second Fallujah and all that. So it was kind of hostile while we were there. And during my time, during route clearance and stuff, I was hit by an IED. So I did get injured over there and sustained a traumatic brain injury. So it was definitely a unique challenge continuing the mission with something like that. But we did continue mission. Majority of us did come home. Mm-hmm. And it was just a good time to, you know, it wasn't that bad. So
Interesting. Well, Karine, you did a lot of work stateside. Tell us what you did for the Navy during your 5 years of service.
Let's see. When I originally joined the military, I had my recruit training up in Great Lakes, Illinois. That really felt like it was part of the mission, though it wasn't, like, you know, directly part of any of my duty stations or anything. It was really cold up there, by the way. And then got in D.C. It's a unique thing, I think, for someone lower ranking to start off with shore duty. So when I had that chance, a lot of the, we call it like the lower ranking work, mm-hmm. ended up falling on me. But then I also got another unique chance where I started doing, like, I started going to funerals. So I started performing at some of the funerals there, or just attending some of the funerals mm-hmm. with some of the officers, sometimes just assisting, sometimes just there as a Navy individual. And then that led to them offering me to also be an IT, but over at the Pentagon. And then I went over to Naval Station Mayport it's next to Jacksonville, Florida, and I did 2 7-month tours. Basically what a day in the life of any IT, I think we each have different experiences in that, because you can have anything from older technology equipment, some radio-related equipment, because, you know, communications.
Right.
A lot of electrician-based work, satellites, computers. And when you're out to sea, that means no beginning point. You have to maintain everything. There's no, you know, Comcast or something.
Right.
To get
you can't call
connection.
The service technician. You are the service
you
technician.
You can't. It is you. You have to find, you know, whether it's satellites and making sure the ship connects mm-hmm. to that. Like, there were so many different things that came along with that, but it was a very unique experience, I think, to be in IT there. And now I think maybe Lyle might relate in that. And then you get out the military and you're like, oh, where do I use all these skills?
Precisely.
Yeah. Well, Lyle, I do want to come back to you because you had this traumatic brain injury, the TBI that you referred to. How did that translate when you came home? I mean, obviously there was more that you needed to do, recovery time that you needed. How was the transition from deployment to civilian life for you?
It was actually, when I first got back, it was kind of difficult because once I got back to Germany, that's where I was stationed when we went and got deployed to Iraq, they were deactivating my unit. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I came up on orders for recruiting duty. So I didn't really, during the time, get the medical help that I needed.
You were trying to get to your next assignment. Oh, okay, okay.
So once I got back in stateside, went through recruiting duty, that's when my office manager, our station commander at my recruiting station, noticed that there was a little bit, you know, difficulties. I was having trouble concentrating, migraines, memory lapse, couldn't remember a lot of day-to-day functions. So during that time, you know, she pulled me aside, said that she would like me to go see somebody about, about counseling and stuff like that, because I was having a hard time with the readjustment. So that's when, before I even started working for the vet centers, I actually was a part of the vet center. I went over there for help.
As a client.
As a client.
Yeah. Okay.
So during that time, they were very, you know, open. They helped me through my experiences. I also got enrolled with the VA. I was in the polytrauma outpatient unit for a couple of years, you know, redoing speech therapy, cognitive processing, prolonged exposure, some of the evidence-based treatments that are available to us veterans within the VA system. So that got me interested in going back to school after, you know, and with the support network, with the family and stuff behind me, to actually become where I am today. Yeah. So with those experiences, when I was going to University of South Florida, one of my guidance counselor actually pulled me aside and told me about the peer supports program to help other veterans as a liaison to that are coming back. So I helped them. I did individual groups, different types of therapies with them, individual counseling, just to help them act as their liaison among the VA and the community and stuff like that. Because a lot of veterans don't realize that there's a lot of help out there for them. It's just trying to figure out where to reach out for that help. Yeah. But that's why when our the Vet Center posted this position here in Knoxville, I jumped on it because they helped me out with my transition reintegration that I figured I wanted to give back to the community here in Knoxville.
You raised a point that Corrine, you and I have talked about before as we were setting up for your interview today. You wrote to me that there's no real handbook for what comes next after you get out of the military. Mm-hmm. I know that this is a process that's in evolution. I think there's more attention being paid to it now than would have been 10, 15, 20 years ago, but still not quite there yet. What did you run into when you were finished with your service and you thought, what comes next in this next chapter?
I think I ran into what a lot of people might run into. When you get out, sometimes if you have a disability, you know. Mm-hmm. Some of the disabilities are a little bit more obvious. I had a friend that decided not to remove his ring when working with lines. His finger is gone. So so it's like that's a little bit more obvious. But then there's some people that come out, you don't realize that there are conditions ongoing, so you don't know to look for it. There is no, like, even though there is the, I forget the, what they run you through as soon as you get out. It's like a 10-minute interview on your way out. Mm-hmm. And
all then the transition assistance.
Yes. And then it's like, okay, enjoy your life as a civilian.
Oh, interesting.
But I got out and I didn't really have answers. And then if I started experiencing symptoms of things that I didn't even realize were symptoms till sometimes other people say, yeah, no, I don't do that. I don't have that problem.
Interesting.
And then I was just like, well, who do I go to next? You know, I wonder if the VA will still see me. I wonder if that's a thing. I didn't even know if there were, if you know, what the medical benefits were. And so I went. They started looking at things time to time. I do have a disability. Mm-hmm. I have several, actually. But it took them, I'm wanting to say, roughly about 7 years to spot, find, and diagnose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was just like, okay, so you're sick. So that's it. This is what you have. And then you run into this situation where, okay, well, what do I do next? And then you find yourself thinking about things that you don't realize. What are there groups? Should I talk to people? Do I want to talk to people? I'm really not comfortable talking to people.
It seems like each answer raises more questions.
Yes. Yeah. And so then I'd say, is there someone I can talk to? I don't know. You can ask the front desk. And then next thing you know, that person's like, I don't know. And then I think the VA is full of, and it's not, I think it's a mixture of things, because they might be just as confused as we are with the, oh, well, we're not sure. And it's never, I'm not sure, let me get back to you on that. It's like, I'm not sure, maybe you can ask so-and-so. And then, like, you just get kind of passed around.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a difficult thing.
That's interesting. Let us go right back then to Lyle, because I know you and I, before we came on the air, I wanted to ask you about this when a veteran comes to you. And we should point out, too, by the way, part of Vet Center is you have a big mobile unit that you take out to various events. I've seen it in a couple of different places here in East Tennessee, and I guess people also will come to you as well. But when you have this interface, this interaction with veterans, and they bring you like a legitimate concern like this, and it may be something that you can't personally fix, what is your recommendation? Where do you say to go, or I'll check into it, or you should check into it? Where do you begin to solve a problem that to you is new?
Well, that is a unique question there. But for myself, I actually do take the time and act like the liaison. Like you said, if you don't know the question, find the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of resources out there. Like if I don't know specifically, because I'm basically focused on readjustment counseling.
Okay.
Like if it's a benefits question, I would address them to the local veteran service officer, which we have a few up here in the community that I would recommend that the veterans seek guidance through. But like with the medical side of the house, and the, because we're part of our, the Veterans Health Administration, but we're unique in that we don't really fall under their guidelines. We're funded directly under Congress as a special program, the readjustment counseling services. Mm-hmm. So if there is something that I don't know, I would reach out to my point of contact in the health administration, reach out to them, shoot them an email, you know, try to make that personal connection between the veteran and them so they actually have a warm handoff. So I'm not actually leaving them out there not knowing what to do.
Right. We're going to pick right back up on that in just a second. We're going to pause right now for a station break. That's Lyle Allen, an Army veteran, and now works for the Vet Center. We're also talking with Corian Victor, a Navy veteran. As our special edition of Dialogue Veterans Coming Home continues, you're listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. Dialogue continues from WUOT News. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. If you're just joining us, our theme today, veterans coming home and finding what works one way or another. We're joined, of course, by Corian Victor, which we heard before the break, a Navy veteran, Lyle Allen, we heard from as well, an Army veteran who works in, to some capacity, with the Department of Veterans Affairs. We want to be, you know, it is a little bit complicated. And when we left off, we were talking about what you do, Lyle, when somebody brings you a problem that is kind of beyond your specialty area. How do you refer them? How do you do that? Let me ask a related but different question. What do you do when somebody brings you a problem that you know you can't fix? In other words, it is policy that perhaps is set at the leadership level that you know. The analogy I might use is when somebody at the store argues with the cashier over the can of peaches. Well, they didn't set the price. They're just the checkout clerk. What do you do when somebody brings you a problem that only the president, Congress, or the secretary of VA could solve? How do you handle that?
Actually, I tell them to reach out to their representatives, reach out to the patient advocate. If they do have an issue with the VA that I know that I cannot solve for them, I try to make sure that they advocate for themselves. It's up to the veterans, because the VA, we are diverse. We have a lot of different programs within the VA that might not, I'm losing my train of thought here, so hold
on. Quite all right. Take your time.
So, but what I can speak on is with the readjustment counseling service, I just make sure that they advocate for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like reach out to your local reps, patient advocate, and they will be able to assist you, because we don't know there's a problem unless the veteran speaks out.
Yeah.
So we can address it.
Corian, I want to turn back to you as we continue to talk. By the way, I want to let our listeners know, if you have a question for one of our guests or have a story you'd like to share about your transition from military back to civilian life, you can give us a call at 974-5050. You can also reach us on Twitter at WUOTFM or send a message to our Facebook page, facebook.com/WUOTFM. Corian, you're a go-getter, and so you were like, okay, I don't know the answers to these questions. You started to kind of build a list or a roadmap of sorts that for yourself, for your own purposes, to kind of track where you were and who you needed to talk to. Tell us a little bit about the process of of building that, filling in those gaps, filling in those blanks?
I think the biggest thing and the best way to start is just figuring out, okay, what do I need to do? For example, if it's medical related, you know, go to your, I would start off with my primary care. If she doesn't know what to do, I'll go off to the next doctor. Mm-hmm. If they don't know what to do, they'll send me to social services, or they will say, okay, well, there are service officers. Oh, which ones are the service officers? We don't know. Okay, Google service officers, yeah. And, you know, or even just having conversations around. I take a lot of advantage of my in the lounge time. So it's like whenever you're waiting
in the waiting rooms
and things like that, I will sit there and just have conversations with veterans anyway. And you never know. And I think more often than not, maybe about 70% of the information that I've ran into was just sitting down and having good old conversations with people. And occasionally even the front desk clerk would just, hey, come over here. And I'm just like, yeah. And they're like, well, we heard you talking about, and I know a guy that, or a girl that, and a lot of it really is just, okay,
it's networking, information.
Networking, which I feel like I build my life around.
Right, yeah. You do it electronically, now you're doing it with people, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And I will take advantage all over the board. And if someone doesn't have the answer, I'm either going to find it, and if it does hit the point where it's like, okay, well, we don't know, maybe there should be some, okay, thank you, I'll go ahead and I'll find my state rep, Senate, mm-hmm. Congress, whoever I can. You have to not be afraid to do those things. First off, I want to stress to most veterans, like, if you need help, don't be afraid to go there. And in fact, if you shoot too high, it's better to be overdressed than underdressed. So if you shoot too high, most of the time they'll just say, oh, okay, let me get you in contact with someone. I'm sorry you even got pushed around to the point where you felt like you needed to come to me. And they will make sure to get you to whoever you need to. But don't be afraid to make that jump. I'm not afraid to make that jump. Like, if
I get that impression. Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, we don't know who. It's okay. I know where the president lives. I'll find him. It's just,
and find out what's going on.
I'll find a way. I'll contact his phone office.
All right. So then how long? This sounds like an ongoing process. So you got out in 07. We're now 11 years after that. Are you still building this roadmap, still building this list day by day?
Yes, because it became, it's like, you know, what our main topic is here today. It's, what are the things that veterans deal with after discharge? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you deal with things you know happen or exist, but then there are some things that you start to deal with or you find yourself dealing with that you didn't even realize existed before. Like, I didn't know that I would be able to get help with medical. I didn't know that I would be able to get help with financial issues, mm-hmm. with school, with all of these different things. And all of those things require a completely different group of people.
Yeah, and that's interesting.
So it's a roadmap leading in many different directions from all the different issues, but I try to keep them organized.
And then, too, from your experience, Lyle, when you work with other veterans, you were saying that sometimes the questions are unique. Are the roadmaps also unique depending on a veteran's needs?
Yes, it is. Every veteran, they have different issues that they need to overcome.
Yeah.
So it's not just one, say, A works for everybody.
Right. There's no template. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You definitely have to work to find out exactly what the veteran's needs are and then try to figure out with treatment plans or different scenarios what would best suit them.
Do you find, Lyle, in your line of work, that the fact that you've been through this and continue to go through this, meaning the recovery process and the next chapter that we've been talking about, gives you more credibility than if that person on the other side of the desk is wearing a suit and has never served? Do you feel like that works for you and in your liaison with people?
I do, because it's like the commonality there.
Yeah.
Since we all served. So, like, that's the best part about the Vet Center, too, is about 70% of RCS staff are veterans themselves. Mm-hmm. So we actually have a better understanding of exactly what the needs are for the returning veterans. And by building that commonality, there's that trust that rapport that's being established. So a lot of veterans do respect that, because I'm not going to have a veteran do one thing that I haven't tried myself.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that the system works, and I will initiate my own, like, for instance, like requesting records.
Mm-hmm.
I would do the work myself first, see exactly how long it takes.
And what potential hurdles or what do you need to know? Yeah, That's a great question. What do you think is the most difficult part for a veteran? Like what, when you're talking about trying to track down records or talk to the right person, for you, what is that most difficult thing you've discovered? The one that presents the most hurdles, might be the most trying thing.
As a veteran, yeah. Speaking as a veteran, and not, you know.
All right, you're taking off your official hat.
Official hat.
All right, very good. Understood.
I would have to say it's just actually trying to find that point of contact that you do need to get in.
Just to get started?
Started.
Oh, gosh.
Like, it's like the switchboard. That could probably be definitely.
Do you ever get into the position then, too? And then, Corrine, you can talk to this, too. I know as a reporter, there are times if I'm covering a story and I'm like, well, gee, I don't know off the top of my head the entire list of people who works at this organization. I call the receptionist and I say, I'm working on a story about X. Who in your office knows about this? I mean, have you had to do that, Corrine, where you just say, look, this is my problem. I'm going to tell you what it is. You tell me who I need to talk to.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, it's like, what's the saying? You throw things against the wall and just see what sticks.
Oh, yeah, you throw the spaghetti against the wall.
Just see what sticks.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't know the answers. And, you know, sometimes they don't know the answers. But I've gotten a little bit more extreme at some of these. I didn't get I started here in Knoxville in 2010.
Okay.
And there had a point where the people at the VA couldn't give me answers, or some people just seemed really passive. I didn't know who to go to. Did my research, and I've seen, okay, well, San Francisco has some of the best results.
Oh, interesting.
I literally dropped everything here, quit my job, got rid of the house that I was living in, drove out to San Francisco, and I was like, okay, who can help?
Wow.
And that's legit what happened. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, okay, well, we don't know, but you know what? Give me a second. And it's just like, okay, so this girl just drove across the country.
To be here, to
and
talk
like,
to us.
Yeah. I don't think she's going to leave. Like, she just drove across the country. I don't think she's leaving the office. We need to find something.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I would do the research. I would go to the different offices and doors. It's searching. It's digging.
It sounds like, do you feel like you've gotten better at least asking the questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time I have more answers. And every single time I've left someone's office, I just go, do me a solid. Hold this information. Share it with whoever you want because this can help the next veteran. And, you know, I'm just like, trust me. We don't know.
Yeah,
they don't know. I didn't know. And clearly, you know, in some cases, I'm like, you didn't know. Save this information. Share it with more people.
Yeah.
We got to get the information out there so that people don't have to do this much digging.
Have you thought about getting into veterans advocacy or doing a job kind of like Lyle does? It sounds like you've done a lot of the groundwork. I mean, have you considered that as your next step?
I have, actually. I've considered it because sometimes I'll just hear someone else's story, like I said, just sitting in the waiting area, and I'll just go, well, sir, have you tried this, by the way? And then we just sit there and we have a conversation, and I'll relate and empathize, let them know, like, hey, I've been down that. I know it doesn't look like it, but I promise you, I've been down this road, too.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what can be done. And I'm actually working with the pre-college program
here at UT?
To try and work towards getting a degree in sociology, just to make me, like, tweak it a little bit, what I do and how I help people.
Yeah.
I do want to help people. I don't want to do it. I want to do it more on a volunteer basis and see what I can do. And I'm working, since I was in IT, I can't do much of that anymore. But I'm working on maybe building a site or somewhere that can be a great place for veterans to go. And I'll share it with other veteran services to see if they want to add that on to their sites or just something, somewhere we can go. Because that was my hardest problem was, where do I go?
Yeah.
Or if you're a homeless vet. Where do you get this information? Like,
how would you access it?
How would you access that? And if not with with the internet, maybe we create pamphlets off the top of my head and just leave them in random places that we think they might go and get this information.
Yeah.
There are answers and there are ways. I don't believe in, like,
it can't be
no
done.
Win. Yeah, that's
okay. If you want to share your story or ask a question of one of our panelists, you can join us at 974-5050, tweet us at WUOTFM, or join us on Facebook, facebook.com/WUOTFM. Lyle, turn back to you. This was an interesting process for you. Again, we were just talking about how Corrine's been out now for 11 years, and it's still an everyday process. You finished your tour in Iraq in 2005. What are you still learning today, 13 years later?
That things change on a constant daily basis. Mm-hmm. So it is definitely important to do the networking. Try to find that one person that can assist you, act as your liaison. And like with the vet centers, we do have a lot of experienced staff out there, and a lot of people don't realize about the services that we provide. But if there is a veteran that is in need and stuff, please send them down to our location. We can definitely work with them one-on-one and figure out what the needs are, because we do serve active duty military personnel as well, along with Gold Star families. Mm-hmm. And we provide that readjustment counseling, especially for those veterans that experienced the loss or were in combat, conflict. The Vietnam era veterans were able to see as well.
Let me ask you this. You brought up Vietnam veterans, and when I was growing up, a veteran was somebody who was your grandfather. Korea, Vietnam, World War II. Veterans are now much younger than me. I was a senior in high school when the Iraq War began in 2003, and so now we are many years removed from that. And I know, I've been out of, so 15 years ago, I guess, since I've been out of high school. Do you find that there are different generational needs as we see the ranks of the older veterans are dying off and they're, you know, growing smaller, but we're getting this larger group of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who are much younger? I mean, are the needs different generationally, or are they pretty much the same across the board?
No, there is definitely a difference with the needs. Mm-hmm. Like the older Vietnam-era veterans, they're experiencing, well, a lot of them are retiring now.
Yeah.
So they're having time to think about Vietnam. They don't know who to turn to, you know. So they're experiencing maybe a decline or, you know, because they had their own coping mechanisms,
yeah,
like work.
So and then when that gets taken away, you have to invent something new.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So, and with the returning OIF, OEF vets, it's pretty much their needs are finding a job, getting back to school. So they're actually just starting out where mm-hmm. the Vietnam veterans, you know, they're completing their careers.
Yeah.
So the needs are different there.
How do you adjust to serving them? I mean, here's something that's interesting to me, right? So obviously you said you went through the VA processes as the client first, and now, of course, you do the work as a liaison or as a helper, which means you probably had to learn a ton of policy. You had to learn a ton of what could and couldn't be done and boundaries and, well, here's who you talk to. How's that process been for you in learning how to connect these people in the right direction?
Well, I haven't really had an issue trying to get them connected, because mm-hmm. As long as, you know, I'm helping a vet and I'm making sure that I'm within the regulations and stuff doing so, I'm more than, you know, happy to assist. I haven't had any issues. Nobody has ever came to me telling me that I was in the wrong for trying to help a vet.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, so being a veteran myself, sometimes you do take that, you know, that hat off, say, hey, have you tried this mm-hmm. Route? Because if they depleted all their resources there's other resources out there that they can try to accomplish a task.
Do you find it's kind of, and Corrine mentioned this a moment ago, that it's not just governmental agencies, but it might be your doctor, it might be your university, it's mm-hmm. a nonprofit, it's an advocacy group. There are a lot of people who might have fingers in this particular pie. How do you sort out, you know, working with or directing people to these other organizations or other avenues that exist outside of the confines of just what is under the Department of Veterans Affairs?
We network a lot with a lot of the other agencies. So if there's something, because vet centers were able to see combat vets and all that, regardless of discharge type, so they can have dishonorable discharge and we can still serve them. But if there's veterans out there that haven't been in combat, there's a lot of community resources out there that can assist them with counseling and readjustment that we, you know, we send a referral to where they can actually seek help. We're not going to turn a veteran away. Mm-hmm. We can see any veteran on a humanitarian basis and find that resource for them out in the community.
Okay.
So we're not going to turn anybody away.
Yeah. And then just for geography's sake, you said people can come visit you. Where are you based?
We're in downtown West, 1645. We're in number 28 down there.
This is off Ray Mears Boulevard, and so Kingston Pike. This is west of downtown Knoxville, but before you get to Farragut.
Yes.
It's in that area. Okay, all right. And it's near Westtown Mall, I think.
Yeah.
It's just west of there, just down the street. Okay.
Pretty close.
Are you at the VA hospital?
No, we opened up our new location, so we're actually having a grant grand opening on the 16th of this month.
Next to it? Is it like down the street?
Yeah, you know where the radiology department, audiology clinics
are? You're next to like the Hibachi factory.
Yeah, same.
Over there.
Okay. That's where
I'm at. This is where I know. Comcast and Hibachi factory right there.
So come down, so eat, stop,
have
in,
some lunch.
Have lunch.
And get some help. That's great. Well, there you go. Right now, we're going to pause for a station break. We'll pick up our conversation with Lyle Allen and Karin Victor for a final segment of Dialogue in just a few moments. You are listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. You're listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. Good afternoon. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Our theme today, veterans coming home. An Army veteran who served in Iraq, a Purple Heart recipient, now works for Vet Center. And Karin Victor, a Navy veteran who served from 2002 to 2007. And both of them now actively involved in helping veterans find what they're looking for, but also learning themselves as this process goes along. Don't forget, you can join us at 974-5050. 5500 is the pledge drive number, forgive me. 5050 on Twitter at WUOTFM or on Facebook, facebook.com/WUOTFM. As we talk about the complexity, and Lyle, I think you'd be best suited to answer this one, of transitioning out from military to back to civilian life, who's responsible for doing that prep? Like who, I mean, the before and the during transition back to civilian life, who's responsible for like, okay, did you do the exit interview? Did you do all this kind of stuff? Who's in charge of that? Is that each branch of the service? Is it VA? Who's doing that?
Well, when you go throughout the service, I know everybody's mindset is like, I just want to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So I know when I went through the transition assistance program at MacDill Air Force Base, it was like a week long, but I really don't remember anything because I was just focused on getting out.
Yeah.
So, but during that time, they did have representatives from the VA that showed up and all these other organizations, even how to prep for an interview and stuff like that we went through. But just being that time, knowing that you're getting out, you don't really focus on all the...
Is this one of those situations where if I knew then what I know now, do you sometimes think about, like, God, I wish I'd paid closer attention?
Yes, definitely. And with the programs out there, all I want to say is if you are active duty going through, make sure you pay attention because it will benefit you in the long run.
Yeah.
And I know our programs here at the Vet Center, you know, we do act as liaison and we kind of help guide the veteran, but it's up to that veteran to make sure that they...
Well, to continue to pursue the path, I guess. Yeah, yes. You got to have some stick-to-itiveness. It feels kind of like, you know, when you're applying for a job and you get turned down 12 times, you still have to put in a 13th application. It feels like you just have to keep doing it. Karin, tell me about how, when it gets difficult, is it kind of dispiriting? Is it hard to find, like, tomorrow I got to get up and do it again, you know, if you find that you're running into a brick wall or something like that? How do you get through that?
I guess I've just always... Or at least for decades, I have lived by the just keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that mantra of just keep moving forward. Because there were lots of times, like, I didn't just take this as a simple thing. I realized that this was something I had to go full on. And that meant 8-hour days. Like, I handled my VA situations like it was a full-time job. And sometimes that literally went to 10-hour days. 5 to 6 days a week of me just going from one person to another until they were just like, shut her up. Give her what she needs. Somebody find somebody that can help her. And sometimes that's just what it is. It does get disheartening and it does get very frustrated. And it does feel like, oh, is this ever going to end? Is this going to happen for me? Am I actually going to get help? And you'll even find some people that say, you know what? No, like there's nothing you can do. Like, you can't get this done. So you might as well just stop. And I'm just like, okay. And then I'll go and I'll find something else and I'll try it again.
Or I know what you mean.
Don't be afraid to reapply, appeal as much as you need to until you get what you feel, you know, you need, deserve, want.
All right. We have a caller on the line, William in Kingston. William, go right ahead. You're on Dialogue.
Hey, thanks for the program today.
No problem.
Question for you. I was in the Navy from 1965 until 1972. Got out, had a career and everything. About 5 or 6 years ago, I said, wow, let me see if I can get some VA benefits. So I went down and signed up. Actually, I went to Murfreesboro, to the hospital in Murfreesboro, and signed up there. And I have to pay a copay. Do you have to pay a copay for anything?
All right. Either of you, Corrine, you want to take this one first?
Sure. It depends. It depends on exactly what it is. There are always departments, from what I have found, whether it's within the VA or if you find groups that like to assist veterans. There are usually, generally, like always ways of getting someone else to assist you. I've not done a copay to date, and I will, and I've gone just about everywhere, and I just.
Yeah, go ahead.
Another comment. Yeah. Now I was told that if I had assigned, if I had have signed up on the day that I got my walking papers in 1972, I would not have to pay any copay. Is that true?
All right. That, Lyle, that sounds like maybe a question for you because you know the policies and stuff. What does that sound like to you?
Well, that's a little bit outside of my expertise.
Specialty. Okay. All right.
So I'm with readjustment counseling.
Who can I talk to about it then?
With that, I would definitely reach out to the billing department at the Veterans Health Administration at your local outpatient clinic.
And this would be the one we were talking about on Raymier's here in downtown
West. You can do Raymier's, Murfreesboro. There's all throughout the communities.
Okay.
They do have that. And they can explain the different priority groups because I think there's like six or seven different priority groups that you can be placed in. Because I know if you're service-connected for that condition, they won't bill you.
Exactly, yeah.
So, however, if it's something that you're not service-connected for, then yes.
No, you know, I thank goodness I'm not service-connected problems. But, you know, I get a pair of glasses every year. I get a physical. And every 3 or 4 years, they give me a hearing test.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only services that I receive from the VA right now. But along with them and my primary care physician locally, you know, they work in conjunction, I guess, we would say.
Okay. All right. Well, William, thank you very much for sharing that with us and for asking your questions and for listening today. We appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah, they actually means tested me, by the way. I had to show how much money I earned a year and everything.
Okay. All right. And Corrine, you had something to add to that.
Just really quick there. William, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Try the Veteran Service Officer as well. I know that there's one off of Executive Park Drive. I think that's Cedar Bluff area.
Mm-hmm.
They just have opened a new office. There are two gentlemen there, and sometimes they have additional answers. I know I've heard some veterans say that because they served at a specific time, they were denied certain rights, but I've also seen a lot of people say, you know what, I'll override that, or here, you know what, I know a guy that can probably help you override it. You might have to go through a few back doors for that one. But
all righty. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much, William. We appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. As we continue along with our conversation here on Dialogue, again, the theme is veterans coming home. What an interesting conversation, because that actually echoes the thing I asked you about earlier, Lyle, which is generational differences. For older veterans, they're going to be talking about things most older Americans do, like a declining eyesight or the need for, like, mobility or, you know, problems with joints and things like that, in addition to whatever may have come out of their military service, but just the general aging process. In those kinds of cases where it's the usual kind of health concerns that any member of the civilian population might encounter, how do you handle those?
Well, with those, it's all everybody's unique,
mm-hmm.
First of all. And with those, like the vision and hearing, I do tell them, saying if they are having a decline, more than likely, depending on their job or MOS in the military or A school, they can actually get service-connected for those conditions, but they would have to go to a veteran service officer first.
Okay.
And get service-connected for those.
Okay. Corrine, as we were talking about this here, something that I wanted to kind of know about, what do you wish somebody had told you before you got out? And we've already talked about this in the broad sense and in some, like, anecdotal sense. Lyle, of course, related. He's like, well, I wish I'd listened more when they were telling me about this. But it sounds like for you, what you've said is kind of knowing that there's not the single encyclopedia or Bible for this transition would have been helpful. So what do you think about that? What would be the advice you'd give to someone in your position who's like, Corrine, I'm just about to get out. I'm wrapping up my tour. What would you tell me?
Okay, and I'm going to try to make this as brief as possible, but I think...
All right.
And it won't take... It's not that it'll take a long time. It's just a decent list.
Yeah.
That we have benefits, that there are grants, that there are people you can ask, that you can get medical and dental benefits. Ask. It does not hurt to go to medical and just say, hey, can you go ahead and, you know, I just want to make sure I'm okay.
Yeah.
Because they also have time frames at which if you do not report it within a certain time frame.
That could hurt you.
That can absolutely hurt you. Education, housing assistance. I'm going to try to just read this out.
Go right ahead. Okay. Take your
education,
time.
Housing assistance. If you're homeless, you could be helped. Programs, that there are places you can go, that there are places outside the VA. There are entire like companies and organizations that are just like, we're legit just here to help. If you come and you're a homeless veteran, we will find you a place to stay. Mm-hmm. We will pay for your first apartment. We will give you free furniture. Like, these things exist that people don't know exist and they don't realize it. Long-term care exists, caregiver support, burials, deaths, the fact that if you are a veteran and you were honorably discharged, you can request to be buried at a veteran cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
It can be DC, it can be out here. We've got several out here.
Yeah.
Certifications, if you're going to school, tax preparations are free. I maybe paid for it twice, mm-hmm. and that was just because I was just didn't feel like searching for someone in that area.
Yeah.
But other than that, I never pay for my taxes to get done. They will take care of it for you. Life insurance, housing, financial, dependents. Sometimes you feel very alone, and, you know, not all of us come out and have a big group of friends. There are other people you can find. You can go to events with veterans. Yeah. You can go to meetups. There are places you can go for the holidays if you don't want to be alone. There are also places you can go to eat for free if you want to do that. A lot of stores offer discounts. I wish somebody told me that.
Yeah.
There are a lot of stores and a lot of companies as well. And disability, you can shoot for that. But just because there's disability, but there's also something called employability, which you can also, by the way, receive things for. License plates are a thing. Little things you don't think about, but that can save you money. I never have to, like, my license plate is permanent on it, so that's it.
You don't have to get it done every year.
Oh, no, okay. To be fair, I've got 100% disability, but, you know, if you're out there and you don't know, that's a thing. Airports make exceptions for you. You get to go in first, by the way. Not a big thing.
Hey, that is true. That is true. Yeah, it's a little something.
It's not a big thing, but to anyone that's ever waited in line at a Department of Motor Vehicles, mm-hmm. you understand the struggle, but we've got lines for us, by the way, just so you guys know that. Service animals are available, $15,000 to $25,000 animals for mm-hmm. those who don't know. So it's a thing. Hunting and fishing licenses, we could get permanent. You could get a permanent gun license at a discount or a permit,
mm-hmm.
gun permit
yeah, yeah.
out here.
Yeah.
It's not in New York where I'm from, but
that's right.
Here,
yeah,
that's a thing.
Permit, yeah.
Sometimes I wish I knew that the VA doesn't always know the answers. You might get them from somewhere else.
And don't let that discourage you.
Yeah, exactly.
If you run into that. Yeah.
Like, and just know where to start. Sometimes you don't have an answer on where to start. And I've met people that have been out for like maybe 3-4 years and they're just like, I don't know what I should have done, so I haven't really done anything.
Do they feel like it's too late? Do they like, oh, my window's passed?
People feel like it's
like
too
a sense
late.
Of morale there.
They feel like there's nothing they can do, or if they're senior citizens, they feel like I'm too old. There's nothing I can do, and it's just a lot.
May not be the case, yeah.
Yeah.
Lyle, let me ask you, because Corrine just ran off a big list there of a lot of things that would be handled by different organizations, entities, people. This brought to mind a question that I have in general about a charity or a nonprofit or something where you get a solicitation in the mail that says, hey, give us $50 or whatever. Where's that money going? Are they trustworthy? So how can a veteran differentiate between a legit, we're here to help you, and we're here to pad our own pocketbooks? How do you not get in the wrong organization or something?
Well, that is kind of tricky.
Okay, I figured it might.
But you just have to do your research, be vigilant, and
maybe look at if there's like a consumer reporting agency or the Better Business
Bureau.
Okay, all right, okay. And would they be able to talk to you about that? Would you be like, we have a list of people that we prefer that you deal with, or people to stay away from, or is that a thing?
We do have a list that I give out. Like,
okay.
But like I say, this is just, this isn't VA material. This is,
right.
You know, so.
Does not constitute an endorsement but might be helpful.
Like
okay,
yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, so Lyle, let's go back to you then. What do you wish somebody had told you? And it may not necessarily be a piece of information that you were given but didn't pay attention to, but something that you just, oh, hey, nobody actually told me about this thing.
Well, what I would wish that a lot of the services would do, or the service members would do, instead of taking the easy out, you know, go through the process. If you know you're injured in the military, go through the med board.
Okay.
Just don't try to
kind of wing it
and get out and let, you know. There are a lot of programs in with the DOD, the Army, the Navy and stuff. I went through the med board. The process wasn't that difficult. And I think that benefited me getting out because I was already service connected, so I didn't have to go through the whole process of trying to prove that I was injured in
combat. Okay, so I know William raised this phrase as well. Service connected tells us that this would be an injury, a disability, or some kind of issue that is directly connected to the time that you spent or a function that you performed in the military.
Yes.
Okay, and so something that is non-service connected would be I got older and my eyesight's failing. Right, something like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. I just wanted to differentiate those two things. Again, as a civilian, and I've never served, I wanted to understand that too, which leads me to kind of my final question. We talked about what you know, would say to fellow veterans or what they wish they'd told you. What do you want civilians to know? I mean, we're talking about a big, wide population that's never served and does not have the experience you've had. What do you think they need to know that would help them be informed about all this, Corrine?
As far as... for some civilians, they just want to help other veterans. They want to help veterans that they know or that might be family members. For some others, they just want to sit there and try and offer volunteer help. The best thing you can do is probably to do the research as well yourself. There are, you know, there might be a tell-all, might not be a tell-all handbook, but you can find things. Like, even if it's something like Veterans Benefits for Dummies. That exists, by the way. It's a real thing.
Oh.
So you can do that.
I didn't know that.
There are several different code books. You can go on Amazon and find these things. If you want to help them, find out what the benefits are. See if they have it. If you really feel some, you know, a certain way about a particular veteran and they're in, you know, and they have an issue, don't be afraid to Google it. Don't be afraid to ask for it. If anything, I just wish somebody told me from the beginning to, hey, you know what, let's start this off on the right foot.
Yeah.
Go do this. Go do that. It's fortunate that the VA is willing to assist me, and they still did the research for my disability. But just look for it, research it.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but we are responsible for, you know, ourselves. I don't know if I would say unfortunate, actually, but nonetheless,
it's a big responsibility
for ourselves, and it's important that we take it upon ourselves. It is a big system. It's flawed. But most systems are, and it's massive, and there's so much information, and not everybody's going to know everything, and that's okay, but you have to do the research. Be responsible for yourself, you know.
Lyle, what do you want civilians to know that you think would help you do your job better, or would just help them be more informed?
Like, if you know a veteran that's in need, you know, and you see them struggling, have them reach out to us. We can definitely provide the services that can get them back on the right feet. There's a lot of resources out there. Like, if you have seen a veteran going through a decline, there's that Veterans Crisis Line number, which is 1-800-273-8255. And for veterans specific, just press 1 and you'll get, you know. So there's a lot of resources out there, and I hope that the civilian population can refer them.
Okay, I hope so too. Lyle Allen, Army veteran, Purple Heart recipient, Iraq veteran, thank you so much for being with us today. And Corrine Victor, a Navy veteran, and thank you so much for being with us today. Thanks to William, of course, who called in, and everybody who's listened. And I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. You've been listening to Dialogue, which is a production of WUOT News.